Vera Filatova played Anya and Kat, Jacqueline Pierce played Gwen, Claire Valsden was Dawn, and Peter Hamilton Dyer was Stuart and Ian. Sound was by Chris O'Shaughnessy. It was directed by Lawrence Jackson, and it was a unique production for BBC Radio 3.
And next week's Drama on Three is King David by Katie Hymns. That's at the same time, 8:30, next Sunday evening, here on BBC Radio 3. A few words now from Martin Handley.
A Haydn cello concerto with Stephen Isserlis. And Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. Preceded by a look through the work in Discovering Music. Radio 3 live in concert with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra at the Lighthouse in Poole. Radio 3, Wednesday night at 7:30.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 10 o'clock. And time now for World Roots. From Egypt, Simon Broughton introduces the second programme on the Nile Project, a gathering of musicians from various countries around the river's basin who've been working on new collaborations based on their respective traditions.
I'm standing on the Aswan High Dam in the south of Egypt, one of the biggest engineering projects of the 20th century. Behind me is Lake Nasser, one of the largest reservoirs in the world. And way below me in front is the Nile, now controlled, heading up to Cairo and the Mediterranean. You could build 17 great pyramids from the stone it took to build the dam in the 1960s. It solved the unpredictability of the annual Nile flood, and it generates masses of hydroelectricity. You can just see the pylons marching out from here across the desert. You can even hear the buzz of electricity. But it was all at a massive cost to the Nubian people who lived here for centuries. We'll be looking at the cultural impact of that later as the Nile Project brings together people from the Nile Basin countries in a musical residency and concert. From that concert, this is a song by Mohsin El Ashri of the El Tamboura group in Egypt's Port Said. The song lists all the musical encounters he's made as part of the innovative process that is the Nile Project.
وعلى الله يا سلمى وعلى الله.
This song by Mohsin, drawing on the popular traditions of Port Said, Egypt, was created specially for the Nile Project, which involves musicians from Egypt, North and South Sudan, Uganda, and Ethiopia, where the Blue Nile has its source over 1,000 miles away. Well, we're here at the Fekra Cultural Centre, and we're going to listen to some of the Ethiopian music that's feeding into the Nile Project. We've got Makwanet, who's the vocalist in this trio. We've got Asrat, who plays the Kabero drums, and Endris, who plays the one-string Masenko fiddle, the really typical Ethiopian instrument, and he's one of the best players in the country. Endris, tell me about the song that we're going to hear. It's the sort of thing I think you hear in clubs in Addis Ababa.
This song is about the countryside, how beautiful it is. It talks about the Nile, and it's about the weather and the environment. It also describes the people of a particular region in Ethiopia. But since it mentions the river, we thought it was appropriate to bring it here to Aswan.
What are people doing when they're listening to this music?
The melody of this song and the way the singer delivers it is very powerful. It's typical of this particular style of music, which is not created by a single individual, but rather it's created collectively, from generation to generation, especially at parties and festivities.
These are songs for dancing and having fun, yeah?
Yeah.
I get the idea. One of the lovely things they've created here at the Nile Project is this tent. It looks like the sort of thing you might build for an Egyptian wedding. It's full of coloured sheets, banners hanging down, red ones, blue ones, yellow ones, up in the roof too where there are coloured lights. And it's the space they're using for rehearsals.
Okay. Okay, Saset El Roba. It's 6 in 15 minutes, so here we go.
The guy with the challenging job of a musical director on the Nile Project is Miles Jay, who takes rehearsals in both English and Arabic. Miles, with the Nile Project, do you feel that we're going into musical territories that haven't really been explored before?
Yes, the concept behind bringing these musicians together was to basically give each of them a chance to present a concept to the ensemble. So that's 18 musicians, and I asked them really to push for something new that they imagined, and also if they felt like maybe revising a traditional piece from their community or something, or reimagining it in a new way. This was also possible. But we've really pushed to give people the opportunity to create something new.
Within the many collaborations that are going on here, there's a meeting of different structures of music. There's very simple sort of structures, and there's very elaborate structures and many things in between. How are you resolving bringing those things together and creating new music out of those things?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent thing to bring up, because not only we can focus on the scales, the sort of micro of each tradition, the scales and rhythmic nuances and all that, but the macro, the way they put all those things together to make a song, and what a song consists of, and what that relationship of instruments is. Now, for a typical Egyptian song, you know, you have a very linear structure. You know, you have one kind of melody in traditional music that's interpreted by many different instruments, but more or less follows the same contour and curve. And in Ugandan music, you have a lot of parts that fit together like interlocking gears, and the relationship is completely different, you know? So one of the most exciting examples of this kind of combination of song forms and musical structures came out of bringing our two Ugandan musicians, Lawrence Okello and Michael Bazibu, to present to the entire ensemble, you know, more or less a seminar and presentation on Ugandan polyrhythmic music.
There are collaborations going on different levels, aren't there? The sort of conceptual collaborations, and then obviously really practical musical collaborations of how do you bring two different scales together that aren't usually played together, retuning instruments and things.
Oh yeah, a lot of tuning. As far as the collaborations on those two levels, on the more conceptual level of the collaboration, we've also been almost like tone painting with concepts of the Nile as a whole. We are bringing in the musicians to create songs on their own, and we're also experimenting a lot, more or less giving musicians a chance to combine with sort of thoughts in their mind about different aspects of the Nile, either conceptually or visually, abstractly, biologically, and culturally. On the practical level, each musician has sort of had their own kind of period of internalizing the new scales and modes they're learning. Most of the traditions we're bringing are really what one might call modal traditions. Each one of those scales has its own inherent nature and its own inherent kind of tonal gravity. The other challenge in the tuning has been more or less just the musicians feeling like they had something musical to say within that scale. And I was amazed because, like, the first day that Lawrence tuned to the Egyptian scale Bayati, which is one of the main modal scales in Egyptian and all Arabic traditional music, we got the instrument in tune after a small period of time. And once it was there, he was looking at the instrument like he had never held the thing in his hands before, going for it, but like every note he grabbed was so foreign to him because this, like, these modal systems don't really exist anywhere else in the world. The next day, there was this remarkable difference in his comfort level. The following day, all the Egyptians are shouting in the middle of his solo, all the remarks that they praise all the great soloists with, you know, as if the guy's been playing Arabic music all his life. So, I mean, in 3 short days, we managed to understand how to tune the Odungu accurately within these modal scales of Egypt. And also, both Lawrence and Michael picked it up as if it had really been music that was a part of them for much longer than 3 days.
Just in front of me now, there's one of these great examples of trying to reconcile the tuning. We've got Alfred on the Egyptian violin, and we've got Lawrence on the Ugandan Adungu, the harp thing that he's playing. So he's every few minutes just having to tune the tweaking knobs, and basically he's managing to find a tuning that works with the Egyptian scale that Alfred is playing in on the violin.
Instrument is not used, even his ear is not, the ear is not used, and the instrument, of course, but we can force the instrument and also force the ear.
Lawrence, very quickly, is it really difficult to retune the instrument like that, to cope with those scales?
It's actually difficult because the thing is that, as Alfred said, there are some quarter notes that we don't have in our scale, and so this is difficult even for the ear because the ear is not used to such notes. It's kind of difficult to get it.
It's difficult for you to tell when it's right and when it's not
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. because if the ear cannot tell, then how can the hands get the right thing? So it's kind of difficult.
You need Alfred as a guide.
Alfred is welcome.
One of the most ambitious pieces, I think, being created for the Nile Project comes from a composition by Egyptian oud player Hazem Shaheen. In the final concert, Lawrence Akello performs a spectacular solo on his Ugandan Adungu, which is retuned to play in the Egyptian Beati mode. This is Simon Broughton in Egypt, the second of the World Roots programmes on the Nile Project. Having heard that Ugandan instrument, the Adungu, in a contemporary setting, I wanted to hear it in its traditional format. It reminds me of Mexican or Venezuelan harps, and in Uganda can be played by large groups or ensembles. Here, especially for us, we have Lawrence Okello and Michael Bazibu performing as a duo with their 20 lightning fingers.
Mama, 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 mama
As part of the Nile Project, here you are, you've brought your amazing instruments, and there are many more than we've heard, and you're contributing to these new pieces that you're creating. What are you bringing to the project, and how is it working with the other musicians and styles of music that you're meeting?
Well, we are bringing, first of all, the warmth from Uganda, the warmth not only in the personality, but also the warmth in the music. In our music, I feel is very warm. So we are bringing different scales that we use in Uganda. For example, a scale that is, you know, most of the phrases that we use, you can make music out of it. So we have a phrase like "Lwalere wafe basente." A brief meaning, literal meaning is "Today at our home they killed a cow." So use such phrases which are really not in the Western part, in the Western music. But also a scale that is really more of Ugandan and not Egyptian, not Ethiopian, not Sudanese. But also we are bringing new sounds, new color of music. The, like the Adungo, of course, the Adungo has an equivalent here, the small one. you bring drums, but the color is different. So when you mix the colors, you know, like you're an artist, a painter, you mix blue and all these colors, and you see, you come up with a new different, you know, music, new different approach to doing things. So we are bringing the color, we are bringing the rhythms, we are bringing all these different styles, and fusing it with the Nile Basin countries, and to try to bring out something really new that has never happened before.
And doing this,
yes,
you mentioned the different color, but do you also hear connections between these other countries that share the Nile?
Yes, there's a lot of connections. Of course, the connections are not just like pa. You have to listen to your music, internalize it, and then the connection comes. If you really pay attention, you see a lot of connections. For example, this afternoon we're playing a music from Ethiopia. And the way they sing, the way they use their voices, the African tone, yodeling, is exactly the same with where Bazibu comes from, Busoga. Exactly the same. So you find a lot of similarities. The way we play the adunga, and then you think, you find this style here in more of an Arabic, and you find them playing all these instruments just in the same way. So there are a lot of similarities, and this maybe explains, if you see the shape of the instruments that we have.
The adungu is a wonderful sort of curved shape. It's got a belly at the bottom and then a neck, but the neck really curves round almost like a swan's neck with the strings coming down to the belly. It's a beautiful shape.
Exactly. They told when they saw the adungu, they were all surprised, especially people from Egypt. They were telling us that they have an instrument in ancient
pharaonic times.
The time
of the pharaohs. Yeah.
Yes. They had a similar instrument, and this instrument disappeared somehow. I think when it disappeared, it came to to Uganda. So when they saw it, they were like, oh, this is something new. This is what we have been reading about in, you know, all these paintings and that. So we have a lot of similarities, in other words.
Lawrence Akello is taking part in a new song by the Egyptian singer from Cairo, Dina El-Wadidi. She was hugely impressed by hearing the sounds of the Ugandan tradition from the other end of the river.
When he started to play, I mean Lawrence, when he started to play his music, it was for us really very beautiful, very different. And the instrument that he started to use, it was really very different. So
was it music you knew before or not? Music from Uganda?
Yeah, the first time for me was really very curious to make Lawrence teach us how we can sing the scales and how can we follow him. The tempo was would really very, very catchy, you know, because it's like make us move and the scale, and he make like or small orchestra with all the voices and the instrument and everyone a different line. So it was like, wow. So it was really, really very nice for me.
A song especially for this project in which Lawrence is taking part, What's it about?
My song about the south.
The south of Egypt?
The south of Egypt.
Beneath Egypt?
The south in Egypt. I mean, it's a general idea, but especially I'm talking about the south in Egypt because I don't have relationship with the Nile in Cairo, so I will tell you why. Like, why I have this poor relationship with the Nile. And we have very, very deep problems in our south, so we have to solve it before we complain each other. You know, it's like a dialogue game. Yeah.
So do you think the people in the south of Egypt are more connected to the Nile than you are in Cairo?
Of course. There are no compare between people from Aswan and from Cairo. We have Nile and we have Nile, but now everything it's really different. You know, they are living with the Nile here. They get money from the Nile. They live for and from the Nile. You know, and
agriculture, in Cairo, fishing.
Yes. And in Cairo, it's really different region, very poor. We just use the Nile for the wedding, when husband with wife, and we need to take a tour on the Nile.
So what do you do? Go out on the boat.
And sometimes it's really, really, really very, very poor. Yeah.
And presumably before this project, you'd never written a song about the river or about the Nile?
No, but I made big research before the Nile project about the Nile, about who the old singers that singing about the Nile, and the singers especially from Cairo. In Alexandria, we have.
So you mean some of the famous old singers?
Yes, the famous
singers,
like Kalsum. Umm Kalsum made one song, and Abdul Wahab made one song. He's very, you know, he's very famous. But in general, the others didn't make that relation. So I was really curious with this project because I really need to deal with the Nile and to improve my relationship with the Nile.
Dina El-Wadidi and her song Al-Ganoub, The South. Aswan, in the south of Egypt, and where we are recording this programme, was the northern limit of the Nubian region, which extended down to Wadi Halfa in Sudan. But when the High Dam was finished in 1970 and Lake Nasser created, over 40 villages were flooded and 100,000 people resettled in Egypt and Sudan. It had a huge human, environmental and historical impact.
I've come to the Nubian Museum in Aswan, which was opened in 1997, and with the director, Dr. Raja, I'm standing in front of a vast relief map, really, of the Nile. There's Aswan, in the distance there's Cairo in the Mediterranean, and in front of us is the area that's now Lake Nasser. surrounded by little models of all the monuments, the Nubian monuments that were moved after the creation of the dam. Dr. Raja, how many monuments were moved when Lake Nasser was created?
22 temples and more than 6,000 small objects.
And where have they gone? And many of them here in the museum. I see there's a big statue of Ramesses II standing here.
Many objects now display inside the museum, and some from them inside the stores, because we change from time to time to re-exhibit the new about the Nubian history and civilization. And also 22 temples moved from the area now covered by the water in the Lake Nasser to high area to save it, from Abu Simbel temple to Philae temple, between old and new dam in Aswan.
Do you think a lot of damage was done to Nubian culture when the high dam was built?
I think yes, because when the Nubian people and Nubian monuments moved from the original area to the new area, they lost many about the tradition, about the link between them and the high dam.
Because and the land and on the which they lived.
Yeah, and the Nile, because the Nile was a creator for the tradition and civilization of the Nubia.
We've been talking a lot in this program about the threats to Nubian culture, the building of the dam, the moving of the villages. And in fact, we haven't heard very much Nubian music in all of this. So I'm here with Zizo Taj and some friends by the Nile. They're going to perform a song for us. I've come with Mohamed Sobi, our guide to Elephantine Island in the river, in the Nile, in Aswan. Tell me about the village that we've come to, Mohamed.
Yes, there are two Nubian villages, and we are 3,000 people who live over this island.
Wow, 3,000 people on this small island.
Yeah, in two villages. It is crowded. It's like New York.
It doesn't look quite like New York.
Yeah.
We're standing under palm trees now.
No, but
not so many in New York.
Yes, this is a farmland area. Yeah. That's why it's quiet.
There's a dog licking my feet. I'm going to move.
Yeah.
Mohamed, you've brought us into this lovely, cool Nubian house on the island. There's a lovely painting on the wall, palm trees, houses, an island, the river. What is this painting and when was it painted?
The Nubians are interested in painting their houses from outside, inside. Even the poor person, he can paint his house. For example, this picture of shows Nubia before being flooded by Lake Nasser. It shows that Nubian used to live beside the river, always, in both sides, eastern and western side. That's why Nubian were not depending completely on agriculture. They were fishermen, and they were the best sailors who used to guide boats between Egypt and Sudan in the feluccas. That's why the felucca men here are all Nubian. They are the best sailors in the Nile.
So actually, this is a picture of a vanished world.
Yeah, but we want to keep the memory of old Nubia. That's why I made this, to show people how was old Nubia before being flooded by Lake Nasser.
I can't help noticing that there's three people playing music here.
Yeah.
There's somebody with a frame drum.
Yeah.
Somebody clapping, and in the center, a guy playing a stringed instrument. What's that?
Yeah, this is called Kisser. It's just five strings, and it is the main musical instrument in Nubia, besides the drum. The drum and the Kisser are typical Nubian musical instrument.
Obviously, the dam has had advantages and disadvantages.
Yes.
In your view, was it a good thing to build the dam or a bad thing?
As Egyptian or as Nubian?
Good question. Let's...
Yeah. For Nubian, completely disadvantage.
But for the Egypt, it is the advantages are more than disadvantages.
Because of the movement?
Flooded all our 43 Nubian villages became under the water. We lost our land beside the Nile, and then they gave them land in the desert.
That was a love song recorded by Nubian singer Zizo Taj, one of the Nile Project singers representing the southern Nubian tradition is Al Sara.
I was born in Khartoum. My mom's family is Nubian and my dad's family is Jali, which is another Sudanese tribe.
How much is your music Nubian? How much is it Sudanese?
I don't think of them as really that separate. I feel like Nubian is a part of Sudanese culture, just like Nubian is a part of Egyptian culture. You know, it was really, I actually think of it as one extended repertoire. I grew up listening to a lot of Sudanese music. And I actually, it's interesting, I rejected it for a little while when I was younger, in search of just other musics, because it was all around, you know, and kind of came back to it when I was older with more of an interest in who I was and where I was coming from, just being an immigrant and identity questions when you're growing up somewhere else. I started coming back to the music, and also the songs of return that are part of the Nubian culture of music. There's a whole genre in Nubian music called Aghani al-Awda, which are the songs of return that kind of grew up after people started leaving the area because of the dams that were being built. But we always would go home. My grandma was always speaking about going to the Binamshi al-Balad, or you go back to the homeland whenever you can, all the holidays, all the big occasions, weddings, everything had to happen back home. But after the high dam was built, no one really goes home anymore. There's no concept of going home because there's no one there anymore. Everyone left after that. And being an immigrant and being somewhere else, these songs of return that deal with the concept of being a stranger, being in a new land, you know, and the utopia of home, it was and it is my current experience. So it took me many years to be able to actually separate the musics to me from, you know, as by genre and by culture, especially the Nubian stuff. To me, it was always just a part of Sudanese stuff. One of the first songs, you know, Anagalbis of Safa was one of the first songs I really remember knowing very well when I was younger. Safa means a weeping willow, so my heart is like a weeping willow tree. That song, I think it's a traditional Nubian song, but it was made really popular by a Nubian singer named Mohamed Munir, who's like considered the king of pop in Egypt. And he's considered the most popular Nubian singer in modern times.
أنا قلبي صف صفا موصف لك وصفا أم تصفى لعيونك يا صفيا يا صفيا نتصفى لو في يوم قلبك يبوح انصفني انصفى مدي الايد مدي تحضنها يوم يدي برمي السلام وردي ازقيكي ازقيكي من شهدي كل منايا وحلمي خير والود كان ودي شمسك خدت ليلي غنت وغنيلي يومك جناديلي وبنورها وبنورها عديلي تفرد شراعك حنان حفرد انانيلي انا قلبي صف صفا موصف لك وصفا ام تصفى لعيونك يا صفيا يا صفيا نتصفى لو في يوم قلبك يبوح انصفني انصفى لو في يوم قلبك يبوح انصفني انصفى لو في يوم قلبك يبوح انصفني انصفى
Sudanese-born singer Al Sara singing a Nubian song for this World Roots program on the Nile Project, bringing together musical traditions from all over the region. It's clear, talking to Nubian people here in Aswan, that they feel a dominance and a certain cultural arrogance from the Egyptians to the north. And this extends to music too. Just as the Egyptians have the splendours of their pharaonic civilization, the temples and the pyramids, the Egyptians have a rich classical music tradition with sophisticated modes and structures. With us, to give us a taste of that, we have a trio of top players: Hazem Shaheen on oud,
Alfred Gamil on violin, who'll be talking to us in a moment, and Hani Beder on reek percussion. They're playing a piece that was composed back in the 1920s. In the Nile Project, there's lots of collaborations going on between musicians from other cultures, and other people are not going to be familiar with the Arabic maqam. Has that been difficult, working on this project, you teaching the others how to do it?
Actually, it's very interesting. It is not difficult at all. It is very interesting for me as a when I teach, and also for me when someone teach me their skills. And something is nice about the Arabic music. It can accept many things. You know, in the Arabic music there is a lot of ornament. It accepts the ornament, the glissando, like the Indian. It can accept the Turkish trill. Also, it accepts the quarter, of course, the quarter tone, three-quarter tone. And it accepts the major and the minor, the classic. It accepts the pentatonic scales also. It accepts harmony and counterpoint. Arabic music can accept all the different genre, different moods, different... it accepts everything inside.
Thank you.
maybe it's by accident or maybe it's by some divine design, but I'm here in Aswan for the Prophet's birthday. And I've come down to where the celebrations are happening, on the edge of the cemetery, at the edge of the town. And it's like a mixture of a fairground, a religious ceremony. There are flashing lights, colored flags, colored lights, and masses of people massing around, selling sweets and tasty things. I've been sprayed with perfume, and I have to say, people are wishing me welcome, warm welcome, and it shows to me, I think, the power of music, really. Not just the amplification, because I have to say I'm really screaming to be heard above the amplified music here. There's six different stages. Each of them belongs to a different tariqa, a different Sufi pathway. But this is a great Sufi event. Every stage has a different sort of music. People, where we are now, dancing in a sort of trance in this fantastic sort of coloured light setting. And it shows the power of the music, really, for celebration. And that's what the Prophet's birthday, I guess, is all about. Going from one tent to another tent here, I bumped into Mina Gergis, the guy who's running the Nile project. Mina, great to meet you here at the Mulid. What is this? Is it a sacred experience or is it just a party?
Well, the Mulids are the perfect example of mixing sacred and profane, Simon. And they have been parties and religious experience for centuries. So that's where we are.
This is a celebration of the Prophet's birthday. So what's the party about? Is it something like Christmas for Christians?
Yeah, it is a birthday party. That's what Mulid means. Mulid means birth. And this is a celebration of the saint's birth. And Muhammad is the saint of all saints in Islam. So all other Mulids celebrate specific Sufi saints. This one is the celebration of Muhammad, the Prophet.
The biggest tent here, and the one with most people at the moment, has got this singer, Sheikh Tuhami, singing. He's one of the big stars of the Mulid circuit, I think, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Sheikh Tuhami is probably the biggest star in Egypt right now in the Sufi world.
And how important is this Sufi world to Egyptian music?
Well, you could say that the Sufi world, or the Mulid world, is really the backbone of Egyptian musical culture. So many of Egypt's professional musicians and so many of Egypt's singers have started their careers singing in Mulids. You hear the songs that they perform there, you hear the poetry that they use, and you'll see so many of the basic rudiments of Egyptian music in there. So this is why you see so many of these incredible performers that can memorize hundreds of verses and have songs as long as Umm Kulsum's. That all comes from the Mulids.
Mina, thank you very, very much.
The culmination of this musical residency we've been following in Aswan is a public concert from which we've already heard some examples. There's a very enthusiastic audience here, and not just for the local stars, and I'm certainly impressed by what's been achieved. The musicians on stage, representing five of the Nile Basin countries, are creating exciting collaborations, pooling their musical resources. This piece, led by the Ugandans, is one of the most dramatic. Thank you. Nile Project has ambitious plans for the future, and those involved seem happy with how it started. This is co-founder Mina Girgis.
I had high hopes, and I think I didn't have high enough hopes for what I'm seeing here. I think the musicians participating are some of the deepest musicians I know, and people that we really entrusted with such a complex and nuanced project, and just watching their musical minds expanding by the day, them coming to us and telling us, this is the best music school I've been to. Now, I started a world music school. I know what that means when it comes from a professional musician, one of the best oud players in Egypt, when they tell me, this is just mind-blowing. One of the best saxophonists in Ethiopia telling me, this is just mind-blowing. One of the best percussionists in Ethiopia saying, I've never been to a music school, but this is the music school I was always hoping to go to. And here is a music school that allows them to not only learn from one another, but also teach one another and create new songs together and feel the purpose of all of this that goes beyond the residency. This is something that's gonna echo way beyond Aswan. So this is really a pleasant experience for me.
Traditional Ugandan song arranged and played by musicians from the Nile Project. The xylophone player and the drummer were Lawrence Akello and Michael Bazibu. And that edition of World Roots was introduced by Simon Broughton. The producer was Juan Carlos Jaramillo. Just to say, you can listen to the programme again through the Radio 3 website. Also on the website, you'll find a list of songs together with a gallery of photographs relating to the Nile Project.
Catch up with the best of Radio 3 online, including five writers in the essay exploring how an item of clothing features memorably in a work of art.
And it has all been foreshadowed by that weird, unstylish confection of velvet, whalebone and gold braid.
Music inspired by the spirit of the dance from Thursday's Radio 3 Live in Concert.
I have to say, there's nothing quite like watching a Latin American conductor conduct a mambo. There was no shoulder shimmy, but it came close a couple of times. He's coming back out onto the stage.
And the latest opera on three, Rigoletto, from the Met in New York. All online at bbc.co.uk/radio3.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 on FM. We're on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online. It's just gone 11 o'clock. And time now for Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
At the start of Richard Roddy Bennett's Jazz Calendar, I pay tribute to him today with a performance that Jazz Lineup made in 2006, and that will come a little later on. And on our Now is the Time feature, we relook at an album from the past, and in the background you can hear a track from Jean Toussaint's Life I Want. And Kevin Lejeune will join me later on to refocus on that album. Kevin, you feel we should hear this again?
Absolutely. It's a great transatlantic piece of work. A guy from over there who came over here and stayed and has been making some great music ever since.
All right, Kevin, we'll talk a little bit later on. But let's begin with a preview of an album to be released in March by bassist Kyle Eastwood. It's called The View From Here, and this track is a good outing for all the band, with Kyle providing a good groove to play on. This is From Rio to Havana.